You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including a new mobile crisis unit in Del Norte County, issues with public safety and staffing, and cannabis taxes in Northern California. I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
First off, I wanted to introduce you to our new news director who just started this week, Maria Carter. Welcome.
Well, Roman, I'm so glad to be here and to be working with all of you and getting to know this area.
Yay, excited. How are you feeling after your first week?
I would say I'm excited and, you know, just looking forward to what's to come.
Awesome. Well, you know, you'll hear a lot of Maria, you know, all over here as she you know, becomes our new news director and leads us. Jane, we're going to turn to you for the first story. You did a story this week about a new mobile unit in Del Norte County. First, what kind of calls do they respond to?
Yeah, so they're calling it a mobile unit right now. It's a truck that they're responding in. They're soon going to have a built-out van that they'll respond in. And they respond to mental health crises and substance use crises. So the program is called Providing Access to Hope, or PATH. It launched earlier this month on February 3rd. And they don't respond to dangerous calls. So if someone has a weapon or a sort of safety component, they're not trained to do that. So that sort of call would still go to the police. But, for example, they've gotten calls this month about a loved one being suicidal. So someone had called into the line and someone being concerned about a family member not taking psychiatric medication. So things like that, the PATH can respond to.
Yeah. And so how does the program work then? Do people call a specific number? Do they call 911?
Yeah, there's a particular phone number, which we have on our website, and then the team will show up. They have a behavioral health specialist and what's called a certified peer support specialist. So that's someone who has experienced mental health or substance use issues themselves. And then that team can help the people in crisis make a safety plan, help connect them with resources if they need it. If they need to be transported to a hospital or to go see a medical provider, they can do that. And then they'll follow up with you the next day to check in and see how you're doing. And the team is really specifically trained to respond to these types of crises, substance use and mental health. And it's sort of an alternative to a traditional law enforcement response. We've seen some stories where people in crisis have ended up hurt or killed by police across the country. But PATH does sort of coordinate with the police to make sure that the appropriate department is responding. So again, if it's a dangerous situation with a weapon, the police should still respond. Maybe the police respond and then hand it off to PATH if there's someone still at the scene who might need some mental health or substance since you support. And then PATH will come to you wherever you are, come right to you, which I think is really interesting because Del Norte's a pretty small county, but it's rural and access can be a big problem. There's not a ton of resources. People struggle with poverty. So some people might not be able to physically or financially get into an office to see a provider. And so wherever you are in the county, you can call PATH. They'll come right to you wherever you are. And that sort of eliminates those barriers to care.
Wow. How's it going so far then?
It sounds like it's going pretty well. I talked to them sometime last week and they had responded to 9 calls so far as of that day. Their program is open Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. They are hoping to eventually expand their hours, but they need to hire some more staff first and they're working on that. And they're also hoping to sort of raise awareness of the program and clarify what the program really is, because it sounds like there have been some questions in the community about how the program actually works and what calls do they respond to. So they're working on clarifying that part of it so the public really understands how it works.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Jane.
Sure.
Justin, you reported on Humboldt County enforcing a tax on cannabis growers. First, what is this tax?
Yeah, so this is the Measure S cannabis excise tax, which was passed way back in 2016. And it taxes farmers on basically what they grow, and that tax can range between $1 to $3 per square foot of cannabis grown, depending on kind of the cultivation method. And the hope was that this tax could bring in a lot of revenue for the county. There's over 1,000 legal cannabis farms in Humboldt County, so that could bring in a significant amount of revenue if, of course, farmers paid the tax. And the revenue would go to county services like enforcing environmental protection laws. That's been an issue. Cultivators, although more kind of illegal grows, have damaged the environment, like polluting waterways and rivers and things. It also funds services for victims of child abuse, funds a rural ambulance service and first responders. So lots of good stuff. But the problem is that the county hasn't been able to collect this tax from a lot of growers, and hundreds of growers at this time owe money.
Wow. Why haven't the farmers paid the tax?
A big reason is because the market's just been really bad for a number of years. I mean, there's like a good year and then a bad year, but basically since the legalization in the state, there's been oversupply and low prices in some of these years, and farmers have really struggled. The counties recognize this, and the tax was suspended in 2022, and then in 2023. Last year, the tax was reduced by 90%, and this year's crops have again been exempted from the tax, so the county does recognize how farmers are struggling. But there's still a lot of farmers that owe money from those previous years when the tax was in effect, and the county set a deadline of the end of March for farmers to pay off what they owe. That deadline was set last October to give them some time. The county also said cultivators can enter into payment plans with the county. According to that county's planning director, there's over 400 people right now that have entered into payment agreements, but only around two dozen have paid those off. So I spoke with Natalie DeLapp with the Humboldt County Growers Alliance. That's a trade group of cannabis growers. And she says as of now, around 75% of growers still owe taxes.
The costs of being a legal cannabis business are not really making ends meet. And so a farmer's ability to have paid off what could be a $10,000, $15,000, $30,000 tax debt has been nearly impossible.
So enforcing this tax could really hurt the legal cannabis industry. You know, this county has a long history of growing cannabis, long before it was legal, actually. And these are, at this point, multi-generational farms. And it's just a significant economic sector for the region. So yeah. it's an important part of Humboldt.
Interesting. Yeah, I know that this area, this county is part of the Emerald Triangle, as it's called, because they produce a lot of cannabis. And that's part of the problem that leads to the oversupply and then the undersupply and the kind of swings, but also just the fact that you can't trade cannabis across state borders.
Right.
But, you know, how is the county considering enforcing this tax? What do they say is going to happen to people with these unpaid taxes?
So the law would require the permits of growers with unpaid taxes to be suspended. Then there would be a hearing to actually revoke those permits to grow legally. So it's possible, at least, that hundreds of farmers could lose their permits and not be able to grow marijuana legally. The Humboldt's Board of Supervisors will talk about this next month on the 11th, March 11th. And like I mentioned, the county's worked with the industry before on this by reducing or pausing the tax. I'm sure they'll discuss different options for growers at this meeting, but the market is still pretty bad for growers. Many are losing money this year. So I think this wider issue doesn't really have a solution yet.
Got it. Great. Thanks, Justin.
Roman, we're going to turn to you next. You covered a special meeting in Shasta County this week where public safety departments discussed their ongoing challenges. So why was this meeting held?
Just going all around Northern California.
Right.
So county supervisors, they essentially want to hear from all the different public safety agencies to hear about the issues that they're currently facing. So that's, you know, the city police, the county sheriff, the prosecutors, the public defenders, and the courts, everyone kind of in the criminal justice system, as it's called. And I'm not really sure why it was called right now, but there certainly are issues in this, you know, system in the county that have been there for quite a while.
Okay, so maybe just time to have a conversation about it in the county. What did these agencies have to say about their current issues in the county's criminal justice system?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is issues still with staffing, workload, and just capacity issues. The jail in Shasta County is really struggling with capacity. You know, the county has been looking at expanding the jail, but efforts there have failed in the past. Because of staffing, they've previously had to close a floor of the jail, which just led to more capacity issues. You just can't hold people in jail anymore and would have to let people go. You know, the Redding City Police are struggling because the city itself is facing a projected $5 million budget deficit coming into next year. And, you know, police make up a significant part of city's budgets. And even if the police could be funded, you know, there aren't enough prosecutors right now to try all those cases. So there's kind of issues like going down the line of the criminal justice system. The district attorney's office is facing these major staffing shortages and an ever-increasing workload because of crime that's happening and catching people. I'm actually interested in kind of doing a bigger story about the issues of the DA's office specifically, because I think it'd be helpful for listeners to understand what's going on there. They don't have enough prosecutors, and compared to other counties, other counties have less of a workload and more prosecutors to deal with that. One other interesting presentation was from the County Superior Court. The number of cases that their court has to go through keeps going up, and the number of judges does not. In fact, the state cut the court's budget by $1.2 million last year because of just state budget cuts in general, and judges can only be added by the state legislature. Here's Melissa Fowler Bradley, who's the court executive officer.
In September of 2023, the legislature passed Senate Bill 75, which authorized 26 new judgeships statewide, subject to appropriation, meaning they weren't funded.
So, essentially what she's saying here is that the legislature recognizes the issues of the low amounts of judges, but they just haven't put any money behind that to pay for more. Those 26 new judges won't get there until they actually get the money. So if that Senate bill was funded, she said that Shasta County would probably get another judge to help with the caseload and, kind of get through all of these cases quicker.
Yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like there's really a backlog, which I don't think Shasta County is alone in that problem. It's a widespread problem for sure. So how do these issues get fixed? Like, did they discuss solutions at all?
I mean, the short answer to that is money.
Yep.
The longer answer is also money. It's basically money is how you solve this issue, like a lot of issues in the world. A lot of these departments are just underfunded, which means they can't afford enough staff to fill all their positions. Another kind of issue is attractiveness of these positions. They don't have enough money to pay high enough salaries for people to want to apply to these jobs. Mm-hmm. The DA's office is really struggling to fill their vacancies right now. They say basically nobody is interested in being a prosecutor in Shasta County. They have six vacant positions right now, and the DA said that they're lucky to get just one person applying all year. And they're even lucky still to interview that one person actually and, even offer them a job, even if that person will take it. So there's similar issues with police departments. Rural areas aren't just super attractive to new police officers. Mm-hmm. And like you said, this is something we've seen elsewhere in our region, staffing issues, especially in Klamath County. I've talked about it in other regions. There's a lot of issues with staffing in these rural areas.
For sure. And so what are the county supervisors in Shasta County planning to do about it?
Yeah, I mean, they can't fix all of these issues. Some of these departments, like the Reading Police Department and the courts, aren't controlled or funded by the county. So they're just there to kind of present what their issues are and give a broader look. Though the county and the city of Reading are looking at their budget for next year. So if you don't know, government budgets like this typically are adopted in June and then they start in July for the next year. And so listening to these groups could kind of give supervisors an idea of what their budget priorities should be. Like how the DA's office said that they're essentially a bottleneck right now in the criminal justice system. So maybe funding them could be more worthwhile than other departments, but we'll have to see what kind of goes on during those budget talks.
Great. Thanks, Roman.
So, Jane, you also covered an update this week to the collapse of a gym roof in the Medford School District. First, give us a background on what happened there.
So basically, the roof of the North Medford High School gym collapsed on February 11th. The district leaders haven't said for sure what happened. They're waiting to do an engineer's assessment when it's safe to officially determine what happened. But the roof was carrying almost 700,000 pounds of snow. I'm guessing that had something to do with it. The gym roof was constructed in 1965. It underwent some upgrades in the summer of 2024, which the district claims would have reduced the load. But again, it collapsed.
Yeah, clearly that did not. And those who were around, there was a big snowstorm during that time.
Right.
That's why there were 700,000 pounds of snow. We got a lot of snow.
Yep.
So what happened this week then?
So basically this week, the school board in Medford declared an emergency to speed up the process of stabilizing the building. So they say that the normal process that they would go through for procuring contracts for work on the building to fix it, they say the normal process would take too long and put their property at risk and limit school programs. Obviously, the gym cannot be used. Mm-hmm. right now. And so they're trying to speed up that process. And so all of the board members at the meeting voted in favor of this resolution, except for one, Michael Williams. He abstained because he wanted to hear public comment on this measure. There was no public comment. It was just a board vote. So basically, it's accelerating the timeline so they can award the public contracts and do work on the gym. So first, they need to stabilize the building, which they say will involve some demolition and making sure the walls are supported enough to be safe. And then once they've reached that point, they'll stop the emergency phase and they'll go back to the regular timeline for the process. So they say the plan is to rebuild the gym, according to the district, and they're planning to meet next with their insurance company on March 1st. So hopefully they'll have some more information then.
Great. Thanks, Jane. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line, which is on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms.